everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with my friend Bob Dio. Bob engineering and producing the show. Together we welcome you to Buckmaster on this Friday before Christmas. It is December the 21st already. We are live.
Is it the 21st?
No. What is it?
It can't be. It's like October.
Oh my goodness. Where did this year go?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. It's it's been fast. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Dylan Smith is with us.
You said that, and I'm just like, you know, suddenly realized, it's
almost
Christmas.
Like Christmas is 4 days away.
Find a couple of presents.
There you go. You better do some last-minute shopping. Dylan Smith is here.
Buy local.
Editor and publisher of the online Tucson-based news service, TucsonSentinel.com. Also with me in studio, Joe Ferguson, political writer of the area's largest newspaper, the Arizona Daily Star. Dylan, how are you?
I'm pretty good, except for the sudden realization that I needed to do some Christmas shopping.
And Joe, how's it going?
I'm ahead of the curve compared to Dylan over here with shopping, so I'm doing all right.
Oh, we're all doing well after the Danish Kringle from Mona's went probably even faster than the one we brought in last Friday. This one being blueberry, last week was almond, but man, it was good. Our media partners are TucsonSentinel.com. Thanks, Dylan, for your support.
Absolutely.
The Green Valley News and Saharita Sun support us. The Tucson Media Group and its portfolio of Tucson-based publications, which includes Inside Tucson Business and Tucson Weekly. Our Friday focus interview today, State Representative Mark Fincham, a Republican representing Legislative District 11. Representative Fincham, how are you today?
Merry Christmas. I'm good. Fighting off a cold, but looking forward to taking a break.
Have you finished your Christmas shopping?
My wife's in the next room. I refuse to answer that question.
Well played, sir.
All right.
Set up.
Yeah, there you go. Let's begin with this, the first education bill of the 2019 legislative session, the bill you have introduced. It's House Bill 2002, which would direct the State Board of Education to devise a code of ethics for educators that would include provisions forbidding the spread of political and religious messages in the public district and charter schools. Is that already covered by Arizona statute, Representative Fincham?
Well, only a component of it is. So I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the Hatch Act, which is the federal legislation that prohibits federal employees from engaging in political speech during an election to endorse a candidate or to endorse a political party or to endorse an initiative of, we don't have initiatives at the federal government, but to engage in political activity on the job or while wearing a government ID or something like that. So in Arizona, we have something similar in our statutes, but that deals more with elections, not once elections have happened, or with ideological underpinnings of particular parties and elected officials, or even candidates for that matter.
All right, here's Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com.
Is there a widespread problem that you see of teachers and other school employees trying to push their political beliefs onto students?
Yeah, so I've been tracking this now for a little over 2 years, probably 2.5 years, and it's just in the recent, the last 6 months, that it has gotten so loud that I decided it's time to do something. I've suggested a number of times to various entities that, if I count teachers as professionals. I'm a realtor. That's not a plug for my day job, but I subscribe to a code of ethics, just like lawyers, architects, engineers, accountants, professionals subscribe to a code of ethics. Yet there doesn't appear to be one for teachers. Okay, so many of the teachers that I've interacted with have said, look, we're professionals, and I'm not taken away from that. I agree. In fact, I think teachers play a critical role in our society, because they're the ones who are acting as mentors, as trusted advisors, to set kids on a path, not just for lifelong learning, but also to set foundational concepts when they're in the classroom. And when I mean, I'm at the point now where I have hundreds of parents from all over the state. For whatever reason, they're coming to me demanding action. I've had, in fact, I spoke with my assistant this morning. I'm getting all kinds of phone calls from teachers, believe it or not, who have said, I am so glad that you're taking this action because our industry is out of control. That's coming from teachers. So, yes, I do believe that there is a problem. I have seen some of the material that people have sent to me. They've asked to have their names and schools and children's names redacted, but it is outlandish, and it deals with everything from outright political indoctrination to bullying. Some of the words that are coming up as I track key words that people are saying are bullying, retribution, and indoctrination. That's almost across the board from teachers, from parents, and even from some of the students who've added their own stories. So, yes, I think there's a serious problem.
All right, let's bring Joe Ferguson of the Arizona Daily Star into our conversation. Go ahead, Joe.
Sir, you've been saying that you're following this. Sir, do you have data, or is this anecdotal?
I have hard data.
What does that data look like?
That's emails, letters, phone conversations, face-to-face encounters with constituents. And I've got a record of it, and it's stunning to see the level of outrage. And it's not just one school district or one school. And I think it's probably the minority of teachers, because I'm getting so many calls from teachers who are saying, it's really time that we have this.
You're talking a little bit about, it sounds like public schools. What about charter schools? What about parochial schools? I mean, where is your concern in those areas for indoctrination in other areas?
Yeah, so private schools, that's a contractual relationship. It's a direct contractual relationship between the parent and the school. So, you know, parents have got a little bit more, I think, leverage with that school because they're paying money. And, you know, with every alumni kind of organization, when money starts to leave the organization, they get really sensitive to that. So I'm not so much there, because the parents do have, I think, direct an ability to exercise direct leverage. When it comes to charters, I'm not making any accusations here, but charters, for example, Basis, Legacy, Benjamin Franklin, some of the other charter operators around the state, I'm getting complaints about them too.
All right.
So this is not just the traditional public school system. It's throughout the system.
All right. We had a caller who did not want to go on the air, but thank you, Bob, for putting that up on the screen for me. Two-part question. Is this really about politics or religion? And do you think you have support in the House for this?
Well, judging from the fact, I think there is support in the House for this. I'm not the only member that has observed this. That has received the calls from righteously indignant parents, from teachers who say, look, I'm observing this from my peers, and I think it's disgusting. That's one of the comments that I received from a teacher directly. Caught me in the hallway at the house and said, I see you, this was last week, I see you drop a bill. I drove down here because I wanted to meet with you, and I found out that you were going to be here today. I want to tell you, this is needed because some of my peers are behaving in a reprehensible manner. It's disgusting. I mean, for a teacher to go to that length to come down and see somebody at the Capitol just to express their opinion on a news story, that tells me there's a lot of angst about this.
What about the
Gone, so this isn't going to affect my children. But they didn't experience that in schools when they were in school.
Is this about politics or religion, was the caller's first part of the question?
Well, I think it's about political ideologies. I mean, the expression of political worldviews that are not germane, specifically not germane to the coursework. So one of the complaints was the promotion of President Trump in a math class. Okay. And by the way, this cuts both ways. I'm not advocating for some political speech in one case and it's okay in another. This has nothing to do with the coursework. keep your politics at home. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, it doesn't matter. If you don't have the discipline to focus on what you're supposed to be teaching and you can't keep your political hat on your home kitchen table, you probably need to find another job, because parents are not paying you, taxpayers are not paying you to advance political ideology. They're paying you to teach math and writing. If you can't keep that to yourself, there's a lot of jobs out there.
How about the portion of the bill that seems to be kind of a callback to the state's so-called ethnic studies ban? What would that part of your bill, what does that say?
Frankly, I wasn't even thinking about that component of it. Mm-hmm. I'm focused on something that's a little bit higher level, and that is, if you're advancing a political ideology that is incongruent with the topic that you're teaching, so if you're advocating for a party, an initiative, a candidate that's pre-election, if post-election you're bashing a party, a candidate, a political topic, that has no place to be in the classroom.
All right, we're
this is not university. This is K through 12 primary education.
Representative Fincham, hang with us. We've got another segment. We're going to take our break right here. Before we do take the break, this sponsor, our wonderful sponsor, Mona's Danish Bakery, bringing Bob Dio on the other side of the glass there, two thumbs up, the wonderful Danish Kringle that we brought in today. Joe Ferguson having his first taste of a Danish Kringle. And the verdict is, Mr. Ferguson.
Oh, it was great. I'll definitely be having more in the future.
There you go. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Dylan Smith, you had some last week.
I had a quick bite of this one as well.
And how did you compare the blueberry with the almond?
You know, I'm going to come down in favor of almond if I have to make religious judgment about that.
But it would be very close, I assume.
Well, they were both excellent, but that almond one last week was just wonderful.
And Bob Dio, quickly grab the microphone. Your vote is?
I'm waiting for the next one so I can decide.
You're waiting for the raspberry one.
Yes.
That might come in next Friday before our New Year's show. Anyway, Mona's Danish Bakery.com. Pick up all of your Christmas goodies. Get your pies ordered. We've ordered our dinner rolls for the Christmas dinner today from Mona. So check it all out. Mona's, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. 790-2040 for Representative Mark Fincham. There is attention to this legislation that he has introduced, so people, I'm sure, want to join in. Jim is hanging on line one. We'll get to you, Jim, with Representative Fincham right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare, are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the Friday show before Christmas. State Representative Mark Fincham, Republican District 11, is with us on our live line. In studio with me, political writer of the Arizona Daily Star, Joe Ferguson, and Dylan Smith, the editor and publisher of TucsonSentinel.com. And on the live line, Jim Kelly, a friend of our program, would like to speak with Representative Fincham. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you, Bill. Mark, I've got a two-part question. The first part is this. Will this pass the constitutional smell test? In other words, do we have any judge, you know, do you think a judge will throw it out? And my second part is this. How does it affect clubs like the Teenage Republicans that have groups in various public schools throughout the state?
Okay.
So let's see. The first part of the question is, and the way the bill's been written, it is for the superintendent of public instruction, the incoming superintendent, and the Board of Education to develop the code of ethics. If we use a model, for example, the House and the Senate both have a code of ethics. I don't anticipate a problem. In fact, I've talked to legislative counsel about whether or not this might be a constitutional issue. So Judge Tashima, going back to the TUSD case, was very clear in some of his writing on that case that political free speech doesn't exist in the K-12 classroom. Now, outside of that, certainly it does. So I think that's a segue into the second part of your question. It's not the classroom. If there is a club that meets at school after hours with parents and teachers involved, that's a voluntary club. That's not something where there's compulsory education going on. So if the parents don't like what the kids are coming home with, if the parents aren't engaged and don't know, and the kids come home with something and say, hey, this is what I learned today, and the parents don't like it, they're able to cut that off and do it rather quickly. So this is focused solely on what's going on in the classroom. I hope that answers your question.
We had a Facebook question. This is kind of along the same lines. Considering HB 2281 being ruled unconstitutional, how does your bill, does it violate the First Amendment rights of teachers and students to receive how does this affect their First Amendment rights?
Well, as I said before, Judge Tashima with the Ninth Circuit, we're not curtailing anybody's rights outside of where they teach. and they're free to speak. In fact, I encourage political speech.
Hey, Mark.
I think we have to have political diversity. But Mark, in the classroom, if it's not germane to the topic, I think that the courts, we've already got case law that supports that.
So what if a social study teacher wants to bring you in for a discussion about the Arizona legislature? How does that fit in? Does he have to bring in one of your Democratic, you know, rivals?
I would suggest that if that invitation comes, that the conversation be very narrowly guided on the function of the House, on the function, not the politics. Big difference. So I probably would want to talk to that teacher first and find out exactly what is your objective here. Because I won't answer political party questions. I wouldn't answer, you know, it's inappropriate. Now, say we have people that bring, teachers that bring their kids to the House of Representatives and the Senate on field trips. And even there, we try to be very careful about, you know, this is the function of the House. This is what we do. This is a civics lesson. This isn't a politics lesson.
All right. David has called us at 790-2040. Go ahead, David. You're on the air.
Yeah, well, two questions. First is, I'm a little confused. I used to be, I think I was in LD District 25, and now you're saying it's 11. And the other question is, what's your opinion of all the development coming in? I drove down Tangerine Road recently. I was just shocked at all the housing developments going in.
All right, that's a little bit off topic, but as far as your District 11 and the District 25, I'm not quite sure about what that's about.
But yeah, well, we see that with redistricting every 10 years. So hang on, in 2 years, it's going to have a new district number.
Okay, and as far as David's concerned about the development in your district, are you as concerned as he is?
I've got a lot of concerns about the I'm going to call it cramming. I think we're this idea, in fact, we just looked at some state land that is going to be rezoned so that they can maximize the number of houses that they can put on it before it is sold to a developer. So the people that have 3.5-acre lots that are immediately across the street and bought into an area where the general plan called for no more than one house per acre, now are suddenly having the rules changed on them. I think that's wholly inappropriate. There's a reason we have a general plan, that's so that people can plan about where they're going to build, what they're going to have. So this looks to me like political expediency in order to maximize sales tax revenue in retail, which, by the way, I hope people start paying attention. Retail is diminishing while online purchases are exploding. So that's probably not a really good justification to just try and pack as many houses, dense. We're talking about dense developments. I'm very concerned about that, and I think it's inappropriate.
All right. What about your legislation that would strip counties of their actually having a say in the whole U.S. Border Protection Fund controversy? As you know, and I know you're not happy with the decision by Pima County supervisors taking away, well, basically stripping the Stone Garden funding, rejecting the funding. What would your legislation do?
So it actually puts in a separation of powers that, as we look at the Arizona Constitution, I'm very concerned that one elected body that has nothing to do with the life-saving and law enforcement mission has authority over another elected official who is directly charged with that mission. I think it's a flaw in our Constitution, quite frankly. I have 15 sheriffs that have all signed on to this bill. They are very concerned about the level of influence that county politicians have over the law enforcement life-saving mission. It may be a news flash to Pima County supervisors, but we have opioids flooding across our border and going into our schools and onto our streets. We've had over 300 people who have been rescued from the desert in the last couple of years by the Pima County Sheriff's Office. I find it interesting that for 11 years that money was accepted. I didn't like Barack Obama's policies, but still, the money was issued, the money was accepted.
All right.
The money was accepted last time. And this time, we have, I think, an irresponsible and careless statement that when we have a different president, we'll expect the money, or we'll accept the money. I think that's juvenile, quite frankly.
All right, we have
so,
both.
Yes, that's brought okay. it on.
Both Dylan Smith and Joe Ferguson want to follow up on this. Go ahead, Dylan Smith.
Looking back a couple of years, it seems like people's opinions on how to handle money and have oversight between the Board of Supervisors and the Sheriff's Office is a little bit different. When we were looking at how money was being spent out of the forfeiture fund, there were a lot of people on your side of the aisle who were very much in favor of more oversight and having the Board of Supervisors have to review and approve all of that rather than allowing the Sheriff's Office and the county attorney to spend that money how they thought was fit. How does this, saying that the county should not have oversight in this situation, square with that stance?
Yeah, I was never in favor of that. I was, however, in favor of the State Auditor General having oversight, which I think that's the more appropriate body. You know, when you have a Board of Supervisors that holds the purse strings of a sheriff's office, who's really controlling law enforcement? I mean, the sheriff is the most supreme elected official for law enforcement in the United States, the constitutional sheriff. And to somehow control those purse strings, to interfere with the conducting of the sheriff's mission. I mean, Sheriff Tony Estrada, I talked to this morning. He's telling me that the board down there quite often interferes with his ability to conduct his mission. So, you know, this is an area that I've been looking at for quite some time. I'm not in favor of the Board of Supervisors having any oversight, quite frankly, of the sheriff or of the county prosecutor, the county attorney. I think that both of those offices, elected offices, should be autonomous. And this is a compromise, if you will. When the sheriff defines his mission, when the sheriff identifies a grant, I mean, we don't have access to the regular tax base that other states do. So about the only way we can get the money is through block grants, because other states are getting this kind of money through their regular tax base.
All right.
So if we've got an opportunity to support the sheriff in his mission, I'm having a political hack get in the way of that and say, no, we're not going to take it because we don't like somebody who's in office. That's irresponsible.
Here's Joe Ferguson. Go ahead, Joe.
So let's get beyond Stone Garden for a moment. You're talking about any grant. Grants come with strings attached. So are you suggesting that the sheriff should have some kind of taxing authority? I mean, that money doesn't come from anywhere but other than the budget that the supervisors control. So how do you get past
that's exactly right.
A grant has strings attached to it, a 25% match? Where is the sheriff getting that money from if he's going to be allowed to accept any grant he wants?
Yeah, so that's we haven't gone as far as setting the sheriff up to go to the taxpayers for a dedicated funding mechanism. We haven't gotten that far yet.
But isn't that the natural progression of this?
No. Well, it's potential, certainly. But the sheriff knows that, in fact, each one of the 15 sheriffs knows that they're going to have to justify their mission with the people. And just like a school board or a fire district, if they are looking at a budget increase or a particular budget, if they can't make the case, they're not going to get that budget passed with the taxpayers. So, you know, living within one's means is, for starters, a good idea. Secondly, if the sheriff is the one who's in the position to evaluate, what are the strings that I'm going to have to be attached by? Should I or should I not? Will this help me? Will this further my mission? Do I think that there's too much risk? I mean, we're electing these people to do a job. And to have another elected official who has nothing to do with law enforcement hamstring that official, I think that's a mistake.
Joe, a quick follow-up.
Were you aware that historically Pima County sheriffs have ran over budget year over year in the tunes of millions of dollars?
Well, sometimes that has had an effect. It's been affected by the fact they haven't gotten their grant money. So, yeah, I'm aware of it.
All right. We're going to have to leave it right there. Representative Fincham, thank you very much. I hope you have a Merry Christmas, sir. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Merry Christmas to you, and hope for a safe and enjoyable New Year.
Thank you very much. State Representative Mark Fincham, Representative District Number 11, with us on our Friday Focus interview on the live line. Coming up, Joe Ferguson and Dylan Smith. We've got a lot to cover today on the roundtable, which is coming up next, right after this.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We had our Friday Focus interview today with State Representative Mark Fincham. We've got a lot to talk about. First of all, the Grand Canyon will not close. The state, the governor's office, Dylan, announced today that despite what is the imminent shutdown of much of the federal government, or at least a good percentage of it, the Grand Canyon's going to stay open.
Yeah, that's pretty similar to what was ready the last mm-hmm. time we were heading into a federal government shutdown. The state sort of taking over a little bit of oversight over what's going on at the Grand Canyon to make sure that, you know, nobody's getting falling over the edge.
And there you go. All right, now that we have
but
that.
But that is an important, you know, attraction. Huge. Brings so many people, and to have it close would be
around the holidays? Yeah, a lot of people.
That would be a heck of a loss to the state of Arizona.
Okay, we've got all sorts of political stuff to begin with. Let's begin with the appointment by the governor of Martha McSally to United States Senator. When that came down, I posted on Facebook in reaction to, I think it was Tim Steller's comment initially about it. I said that the question of the day, Joe Ferguson, is the Democrat reaction to this. Will they be, in effect, happy that it is McSally because they know she's beatable? And she was beaten.
She was beaten, but we're going to see a lot of Democrats who say that, you know, they're excited about it. But, you know, this is a woman with a long history in Congress now. She has the ability to raise funds. I mean, this is a strong candidate. Over a million did vote for her. Mm-hmm. And so I think in 2020, you know, if she decides to run again, she hasn't signaled one way or the other quite yet, that, you know, it's going to be a tough challenge to find a Democrat to run against her that's going to have the same statewide recognition a year and a half from now.
Really, finding any Republican, and the governor was required to appoint a Republican to this seat again, finding anybody who wants to run this many senatorial elections in a row.
Tell me how many.
You're looking at somebody who just lost a Senate race,
right?
A few weeks ago, mm-hmm. who needs to run again in 2 years in a statewide high-profile race, a congressional election,
2020.
The 2020, because and then that election will determine who fills the remainder of the term, which runs through 2022. So there would be another election then, and then because of how the Senate is structured, we will again have for the other Senate seat, you know, in 2024, be having another Senate election. So we're going to have Senate election after Senate election after Senate election.
So are you saying we've got three election cycles dealing with United States Senate elections?
Yep. Well, it'll be four, actually.
Whoa.
Considering the one we just had.
Yeah. We're going to be writing a lot about senators over the next couple of years.
It's kind of nuts how this plays out. But to find somebody who loves to run for office that much, who wants to try and tackle that, to run, you know, potentially twice more in 4 years after having just done it, there were people who were not very enthusiastic about that prospect when their names were floated as potential employees, mm-hmm. Appointees.
Well, we have one name that seems to be very much interested, and that would be Grant Wood's. Former Arizona Attorney General.
Now a Democrat.
And he'll be on the show in January. He's going to be down in Tucson for 3 days. And I don't know if he's, by that time, will have announced or he's still just testing the waters. But he's definitely very serious. Any other names you have heard on the Democratic side?
Not yet, but okay. I mean, it's pretty early, and I think that you have to start doing coalition building before you throw your name out there.
Would she be primaried on the Republican side, Martha?
Absolutely.
I think that is very, very likely. And, there's been some talk about Representative Gallego from Phoenix, the Democrat, maybe wanting to make a run for Senate, but he's got just about the safest seat you can imagine in Arizona, so to give that up is a big, big step. A whole lot of people are, again, floating Mark Kelly's name, mm-hmm. the husband of former Representative Gabrielle Giffords. There's some, you know, people essentially trying to draft him, pull him into the race.
Former astronaut.
We are certainly aware of his stance mm-hmm. on gun control, but on a lot of other issues, he's not all that prominent, and I don't know if he would be able to capture the excitement of Democrats.
And I also heard Dr. Carmona's name floated around, but I doubt that he would go again for that. But anyway, let's talk now about the mayor. Mayor Rothschild announcing through an interview in your paper, Joe, in the Star, last Sunday, the mayor decided to 4-year terms will be enough. That's it.
Yep, and it has now opened the floodgates to speculation about who will want to run next year for his seat.
Let's talk about that.
And that's like, you need to start running like now, yesterday.
So who, let's talk. What names?
So we've heard Paul Durham has said that he's interested in the position.
City councilman.
Regina Romero says she's strongly considering it. And we have Steve Farley who says he will decide and make an announcement next month.
Paul Durham would have to resign, however.
Well, we're still...
Or would he?
The city attorney's opinion is that he would. However, there have been examples in Phoenix where I'm told that they did not have to resign to run. But we will see what happens, in the next coming weeks about that kind of stuff. But that would be a big thing for Paul Durham in terms of whether he's actually going to run is if he has to resign.
And the really big question is... Who's going to run on the Republican side? You know, this is an open seat for the mayor's office. And we haven't heard a whole lot from people who, you know, are even expressing the slightest bit of interest in running for that office. And that strikes me.
I think, though, that, you know, this announcement caught a lot of people off guard. Mayor announcing this was a closely held rumor, you know, last week.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, until then, they just didn't have a lot of people to talk about it. And given the holidays, I don't really expect a lot of announcement or noise in this arena until after, you know, the beginning of the year anyways. But my understanding is that, you know, Republicans have met and discussed it. There's financial backing for a Republican candidate. It's just who's going to really pick that up and run in a place where Democrats outnumber Republicans by a sizable margin.
Yeah, I was surprised.
It'd be a tough race, but it's certainly... possible. We've had Bob Walkup was mayor for 12 years, and in fact, in his last election, the Democrats didn't even bother to run anybody against him.
Yeah. I thought the mayor was going to go up for another term. He was with us a week before that story broke in the Star, and we asked him about it, and he said, "Well, I'm still thinking about it." And I honestly thought there wasn't going to be a big controversy over this, that he would go again. I mean, I guess he feels, Joe, that he's done all that he wants to in office.
And I think that there are some new dynamics in place that are going to make it harder on the next mayor.
Would that be?
The fight between the city and the legislature over what they can and can't do is just a looming fight. And so if the city really wants to make sizable changes, it's really got to face off with the legislature, and that's going to be a big issue coming forward. So whether it's recycling bags or gun control or something even larger like becoming a sanctuary city, these all could face repercussions, serious ones, from the state legislature thanks to a bill that was passed 2 years ago.
Hmm.
Something that really, I think, adds an interesting dynamic to this coming city election cycle is the fact that Shirley Scott has said that she's not going to run again.
She's not going to run after, what, 20 years or so?
That'll be her 24th year when she is done next year.
So
almost a quarter century in office representing the Southeast side. And that is, you know, if that's an open seat, and it will be an open seat, that's a potential Republican pickup of a seat, getting a seat back on the council. And if that turns into something that people really get behind, that changes how everybody else is looking at the mayor's race, I think.
And Michael Hicks, former school board member, well, he's still a school board member, actually, right now, because he's not, I think that happens mid-January, the new constitution, newly constituted TUSD board, but he has expressed an interest definitely in the Shirley Scott seat, right?
He has. And, I mean, that was an open secret that he wanted to run.
As a Republican, right?
Of course. Yeah. And then, you know, Democrats are discussing various candidates, but no one's made an announcement as of 5 minutes ago.
That may have changed just now. Yeah, there's, you know, going to be a whole lot of, I think, people seriously looking at where they see themselves fitting into politics over the next year.
Well, and I think it's going to reshape the council itself and what it does and where it's going with a new mayor and maybe more than one new council member.
Who would you think would be the front runner at this time, Regina Romero or Farley? That would be a very interesting primary, wouldn't it?
I don't know who would be the front runner. We'll really have to see how they approach their campaigns.
And I also think that, you know, coalitions behind these two candidates, who they can get, who the, you know, if Mayor Rothschild puts his arms around one of them.
Right.
Make a difference.
Absolutely.
And who they might end up running against, I think, shapes people's perceptions of who they want their candidate to be when they're looking at a primary.
Joe, do you have anything you would like to tell our listeners about for the paper this weekend?
You know, that we are doing a deep dive into the $30 million that Pima County is spending in expanding the Keno Park area with new soccer fields, new pickleball stadiums. My colleague Caitlin Schmidt is going to have an A1 story in Sunday's paper that's really going to get into what we can expect in the next years as the county expands that park for the first time in decades.
Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com. Your match, it's a 100% match that if someone donates to your nonprofit organization, they're matched, correct?
Yeah.
Through the end of the year?
Through the end of the year, the special national program for news sites like TucsonSentinel.com. It's called NewsMatch, and it will match individual donations, you know, from a individual person, not from a business. They want to try and
incur size,
Up to $1,000 per person.
That's cool.
That's a really helpful a huge boost for us as we go into our the final days of our end of the year fundraising, and that's every year. Very important for us how people around this community really step up and invest in having good local news.
All right. I do want to say that Mona's Danish Bakery is the bakery of the Buckmaster Show, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Steve has been so busy this holiday season, and that's a good thing. We're very happy that a lot of people have found Mona's. They love the Danish Kringle. We do here at the show. I love their baked goods. We're going to have them on our Christmas table. In fact, I think the order was put in today. So on and on, it's just they've got everything you need for the holidays, the cookies, the pies. My wife came home with a sample. I didn't even know that Mona's did a fruit cake. It was so fantastic.
You're not going to keep that around for a few years?
No, I don't think so. I mean, this is, if you don't like fruitcake, and some people don't, I think you should really maybe give the one at Mona's a try because
it might change your mind.
Yeah, I think it would definitely change your mind. Mona'sBakery.com, the website, and again, Swan and Sunrise, northeast corner. Matt Russell, Inside Tucson business food and beverage columnist, is next with Weekend Watch. Gentlemen, thank you very much. A very happy holiday to both of you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Stir it up, baby. It is Weekend Watch, the weekend before Christmas. Matt Russell, president and CEO of the award-winning Russell Public Communications, inside Tucson business, dedicated food and beverage columnist and dedicated foodie, with the Silver City and Grant County underwriting of our Weekend Watch. Just a three-hour drive from Tucson. Great time of year over in Silver City, historic Silver City, all decked out for the holidays. All those wonderful Victorian architecture and homes with all the Christmas lights. Fun place to go. Check out southwestnewmexico.org for the complete listing of great places to stay and so many recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. All sorts of opportunities for a good time and some good food this weekend. Hey, Matt.
Hey, boy, with you and Bill and Joe, I'm thinking this is the Three Wise Men edition of the show.
And you've got the shrinking Santa suit on.
Yes, every year it just shrinks another size. I have to sue my dry cleaners. I think something has obviously gone very wrong.
What's on tap?
Well, I've always loved the Trident Grill for their maritime and military themed burgers and seafood and sandwiches. But now the owner and Navy SEAL Nelson Miller, he's ventured into the pizza space with his recent opening of Trident Pizza Pub on 6th and Campbell. These are all wood-fired pies. They range from the classic to the imaginative, but my eyes went right to one called the Centurion with sausage, pepperoni, ham, sopressata, red sauce, house-made cheese. This sounds like a great place to get some great heroes and some wings as well. Trident is open for business.
Boy, that sounds like a super-sized pizza, doesn't it? Hey, what's the deal with the seven fishes? A lot of people say it's not the holiday, Matt, without the seven fishes.
Indeed. The Feast of the Seven Fishes, kind of that traditional Italian-American celebration of Christmas Eve, anchored by seafood, of course. So I say let's stretch our holiday weekend watch into Monday with the Feast of the Seven Fishes dinner at Tavolino, Skyline, and Campbell. This is a multi-course culinary extravaganza showcasing some creative expressions of tuna, scallops, octopus, salmon, sea bass, mussels, clams, so much more. Just $75 a person. I think it's a delicious way to dine.
Christmas Eve options, please.
Yeah, if you don't want to do seafood, you want to belly up to a big, beautiful bounty of beef on Christmas Eve, the Cup Cafe at Hotel Congress, doing a really sexy, slow-roasted and peppercorn-crusted New York strip. The Coronet on 9th Street downtown will be doing a five-spice beef cheek. You just can't find good beef cheeks these days. So, Coronet, as you and your carnivorous colleague covered this Christmas dinner.
What's in the column in Inside Tucson Business?
Bill, it is the full story behind the Russell's Rye Catcher cocktail at Jonathan Sports, which also poses the question about how the iconic J.D. Salinger book inspired this mixology work of art. You can check it out now in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
Joyous holiday to you, Matt, and your lovely family, and we'll talk to you right before the new year next Friday. Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Oh, so many people to thank. I think I've got less than a minute to do so. Of course, I'm going to begin with the guy on the other side of the glass, Bob Dio has just settled in so beautifully as my engineer producer here on, under our new ownership. Bob is with me now as my producer director. I want to thank everybody associated with Bustos Media, the owner of KVOI and 106.3 The Groove. Very happy with our new family of stations that's growing. Original theme music for Buckmaster by Chris Stefan, our German friend. Great music. Rosemary Brandt, longtime assistant. Thank you, Rose, for everything you do. The entire team here at Bustos Media, including Jerry Cross, our operations manager, Ray Allen, Alicia and Elsa in the front office, all of us wish you a safe and pleasant holiday weekend. Have a good one.